heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation.
The nation.
And now, Malcolm.
Friends, we have three choices, basically. We have the first one being that, except that we are living in end times and fear is the name of the game. That's our first choice, fear. People are saying that we're in end times and everything is kind of coming together at one big collision, if you will, and that this is it, it's over. I've seen reports of that, actually. The second choice is that history has shown us previously we can overcome whatever that moment of fear is. If you look historically at those critical, crucial moments of time that America has faced before, that we can overcome, we can make a better tomorrow. That's the second choice. The third option, you put your faith in God. You know that he has his hand on the wheel, and nothing really rattles your boat. Whether it is the first or second choice that's going to happen, the third choice is where you would fall and say, okay, I'm going to replace the fear with faith and have faith in the moment. So you have three choices right now. There's only three options on the table I'm going to give you today, okay? I want to talk to you today about all of those.
Then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are changing.
You remember that song Bob Dylan sang and released in 1964, The Times, They Are Changing. Everybody knows that. It's a classic. The times, they are changing. You know, Dylan wrote that song as a deliberate attempt to create an anthem of change for the times that we were in. And it was interesting, and I also find it fascinating how we turn to music in these times. Music can be very soothing, it can be very inspirational, but also very truthful, the lyrics and the words. You know, in that song, Dylan says, come gather round people wherever you roam. And admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming, or you'll sink like a stone, for the times, they are a-changing. Of course, that could have been a sermon as well. You could see the pastor up there preaching those words, you know. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone and have that faith. You can see the pastor on Sunday morning preaching that out there. I could have been a pastor, actually. I could have done that in my life. I did that as a young boy, actually. It was one of my short stories I'll share with you today. I used to gather the kids around in the neighborhood, and I would be the pastor or the minister. Wasn't a priest because I was a Protestant boy, you know. But I would play church, and I would be the pastor. Or we'd play school and I'd be the teacher. Or if we had multiple classrooms, I'd be the principal. I always wanted to be in the lead role. I always wanted to have my hand on the wheel, to be in control, I guess, more or less, you know. But I remember those, you know, growing up as a young boy and being in those positions of exactly that. And playing pastor and wondering if I was going to pursue that in my life. And whatever it is, it really does come down to a conviction in all of us, isn't it now? Something in your heart or your belly and your soul that says to you, that's my path. That's what I need to be doing. That's where I need to be going. And that's, of course, the path I'm on now with you all. I get the privilege and the blessing to be able to talk to America, talk to folks around the world, really. And it's a different path than being a pastor, but in many ways it's similar because we're trying to, those of us who get it, or at least in my world, we want to preach the good word. We want to put something out there that's positive, that lifts people up, doesn't play to the fear factor or the extreme viewpoints, if you will, right? So back to those three choices, first, second, or third, you've got to pick a door there and go through it. And you've got to tell yourself what that is and make that commitment, friends. We all have our stories in life, whatever they may be. America is no different. America has had those moments of time. When you hear Bob Dylan say the times they are a-changing, people, they've always been a-changing. There are plenty of times in the history of mankind that mankind thought it was the end times. They thought it was done. We were over with, put a fork in it. This is really no different now. It just depends if man rises to the challenge and what we do with that. And back to that faith. Is your hand on the wheel and is God's hand on the wheel with you? Yeah? Maybe that's that third option I talk about there. You know, I've been thinking about the moments of American history and wondering some of the bleakest times where we thought that we were being challenged and that maybe this is it or something was going to happen next. We didn't know quite what it was. Fear is an unbelievable word. I mean, it's such a dirty word, fear. It's probably the worst word in the English language. Probably is the worst word you could say. I'm going to say to you, fear should scare the hell out of you, you know. And we've had fear. Mankind has had fear all the way through. Americans have had fear, you know. So imagine the fear back in 1776 when the framers and the founders were fighting for this republic and when it was all put together and the Declaration of Independence that happened up in New England. And think about the fear that was around those people, but also the excitement, because fear many times can be butterflies before a great performance. And if you can translate that fear to butterflies and then butterflies to excitement and deliver the truth, it changes everything. The framers did that back in 1776 when they discovered this experiment called America, you know. And these were people that were part of the good fight. We talk about good and evil. And these were unique people that were here on the planet at a unique time and place. Now, who says that we're not the same today, that you and I are not here for another reason? Because we're here also at a very unique time and place. And maybe historically we go down in the history books of being the people who saved the world, just as they did back in 1776, yeah? Could be. Well, the question is, are you up for the challenge? Is your hand on the wheel? You know, do you have faith? Think back to the 1860s, if you can, back to Abraham Lincoln days and the Civil War. The Civil War was a bloody mess and a stain on this country. This was a fight for slavery in America. And this was a truth for the nation. We were divided beyond any other point of time. People think now that it's bad with Donald Trump in the office. Oh, my God, we've never been this divided. You people obviously are not reading or studying history. Really, in practical terms, when you look back, in fact, this is probably a cakewalk right now. Many of you who haven't experienced these things before in our American history, as I haven't, but we understand them, we've read them. And this is part of the problem when you see the young people burning the history and knocking it all over and pulling it out of school. You see the danger in all this. Then they really don't know, and you can't learn from history because history is there for learning. It's to help you with the future. You never want to destroy history, ever. We want to embrace it. It helps us with the path forward, people. So, but think of the terms in the Civil War where your relatives and your friends may have been on the other side of the line. And we were divided as a North and South. We were at war with each other within the country here. I mean, it was a bloody affair. And a lot of Americans died, just as we've done many times throughout history. You think back to the 30s, 39, World War II. It was another moment in time we thought it was all over. And what had happened if America did not come to the rescue of Europe? What would have happened? Think about the sacrifice of the men and women and the patriotism here in America with the people who have come to the test and put their hand on the wheel in a most challenging time, a fearful time, but a faithful time. It never escapes me the moment where people really dig down for more, and they just find they have extra in their belly, extra in their soul to be able to reach out and just do something that's unparalleled in their life, you know. That was another challenging moment of time, not to mention World War I, but these were events that changed the world. They were some of the most important events in the history of the United States of America. 1963, Martin Luther King Jr., you know, the I Have a Dream speech. And the unrest that was happening in America back there in the 60s and 70s, you know, and we thought in the challenge we had with Cuba and the Soviet Union, and we thought it was over then as well. We were done for it. That we were on the verge, moments away from a nuclear war, possibly. I even read a report just recently that the Soviets were moments away from sending a nuclear weapon over, and they were going to land it in the Atlantic Ocean. And they had, their experiment was to create a tsunami on the East Coast that would hit and wipe out Washington, D.C. and New York and all the big landmarks in America, that would create this tsunami effect. Kind of a natural event, kind of a man-made, but create this water, and that would be the way to take out. I mean, that could have been very effective for them instead of just a rocket or two or a missile or two. But, you know, that was another moment of time. It brings back to the Reagan era when Reagan connected with Thatcher, Margaret Thatcher, and, you know, Mikhail Gorbachev and Pope John Paul. And they created, just those handful of people changed the world in ways when they pulled the Berlin Wall down and they did all the things in Europe. It changed everything. And Reagan, by the way, had a lot of critics. There were a lot of people who did not like Reagan, just as much as they do not like Trump. Remember, Reagan was an actor. He wasn't a total polished politician, more than Trump is today, because Reagan was the governor and had a political life before president of California, of course. But he was still an actor, and he was still somebody who had a different kind of life. And they don't really accept you in political circles unless you're born into it and you've done that all your life. You know how that goes, you know? So, but Trump really broke the mold because he had no political experience or history before then, you know. So it's a different thing almost. But you get the sense they hated Reagan for a lot of reasons. Just they hate Trump for a lot of reasons, probably far too many than we can list here on this program, huh? And then remember September 11th. We all know where we were that day when that happened. I mean, I can pin it to the moment. I remember exactly where I was, you know. I remember I was at an appointment in another county on the other side of town, and I was in a business meeting. At that point, I was the CEO. I was of a marketing agency, worldwide agency, is what I did for 25 years prior to this, you know. And I remember being in that boardroom, that meeting, and remember hearing reports whispering in the hallway that something had struck the towers. And I thought, what? Something? How did somebody be so clumsy that they, you know, had a plane hit the tower? That doesn't make any sense at all. What the hell are they going to do about that? And then, like, short time later, there was a second one, and the room got really panicky. Like, you could see the eyes open of everybody, and the meeting quickly ended, and I dismissed myself from that meeting and got into the car, turned on the news, and I was supposed to head back to the agency. I had an agency of a whole lot of people working back there, 60-some-odd folks working at the agency, and I had to get back there. And I'm in the car driving, and I have that radio on, and I'm listening to what's going on, and I thought, oh, my God. We're at war. Something is drastically wrong here. Something's not right. I had a panic in me. Those, you know, that fear took over a little bit here. And I didn't go to the agency. I actually drove home, and I had to turn the television on to find out what was taking place. And I had to sit there in the room, and because something was happening. I didn't know what it was, but I wanted to know, and I wanted to know how I could help or see what exactly was developing. And I remember turning the television on and witnessing that. And then later I proceeded to the agency, and then America had to pick up the pieces. We had to pick up the pieces from 9/11. But it was a moment that people thought there would be other things happening and there could be a full-out war. And it was uncertainty. Fear was there. Remember, there was no air travel for days. And it changed the way we did things. Events like this always change the way we do things, the way we see things. The Civil War did. The World Wars did. Martin Luther King did. 9/11 did. These pivotal events in history change the way we think and we look at all of it. And that did as well. That particular day changed America. America had to grow up again. You know, how many times do we go through this where we have, but it's a continual process, people, in the history of a nation. It never stops. It never goes away, but it does mature the nation, and it matures the people of the nation, where they either accept the challenge and they have the faith with their hand on the wheel and they're able to pull through these difficult times, or they succumb to be just another casualty of the world environment and they don't make it through to the other side. And those are choices we have as a people. Always choices. We have choice, choice. We have freedom of choice. Remember, God has given us all free will. We have free will. Don't ever lose sight of that. That's the most important thing I could ever tell you, is the free will we all possess to do the things we do. We have the free will to choose good over evil every chance. And we have the choice to do that, whether anybody is in the room or not. That's a tough lesson. I tell that lesson all the time to my son. I explain to him what character is. Character. Character, I tell him, is when you're your very best when nobody's looking. That's good character. You always want to be your best or do your best when nobody's looking, whatever that means at the moment. If it's a piece of trash in the street and you want to pick it up and throw it in the terrific, nobody has to be looking to do that. It's a simple gesture, but it's a gesture of good. And it's all these things we do in our life that create that feeling, that sensibility of doing good. And there's so many ways. I mean, just doing good for people, whether it's through charitable organizations or just something kind you do for somebody, or making the right choice, or, in its simplest form, placing justice where there's an injustice, right in the wrongs, putting good where evil is. See, that's the rallying call for humanity, really. And I believe this in my heart of hearts. It really is the good that we need to pull out of each and every one of us. That good is what it creates for this mega force of people. There's nothing more powerful than the human spirit. There's also nothing more powerful than the American spirit. America was really, I believe, God's gift to the world to be able to shelter it and seek goodness. America has a place in all of these events historically. America has come to the defense of man time and time again. And, you know, I hear President Trump just the other day saying that, you know, he speaks a lot about humanity right now, I notice, in some of his talks. And I love that. I love to talk about humanity. I love it. And I love it when he does that, because you don't get a lot of politicians actually doing that. But then again, I digress. He's not a politician, clearly, you know. But I still love that, the humanity talk, and we're able to step back and really look at the big picture. And he does that in a way, see, and that's where so many people have the have number 45 pegged totally wrong. Because he puts America first, so we call that nationalism in a way that, you know, in a good way, that it's American exceptionalism, but it's, you know, when you are the commander in chief and you are leading the country forward, that is really your responsibility, people. If you don't do that, if you look at the previous presidents, the last multiple presidents we had, looking at Obama and Bush and Clinton and Bush, you see where I'm at there. They would all have put the world first. more than America first. That's the difference. Now, it's not that they were totally evil or their intentions were hostile all the time, that is. But they would typically put that, and you really have to take care of your home before you can help other people. You see, if you don't, you know, it's just like on the plane, when the mask comes down, you have to put your own mask on first, they tell you, because if you don't, you could succumb to the problem and you'll never get the mask around the little children or the people that are disabled and unable to do so. It's the same thing here. Do we all have our mask on? Let's put our mask on now, please. And I'm not talking about the mask of viruses and stuff. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a different kind of mask, people, you see. And so that's important to remember that as well, so that we can help others. So Trump is one that he had the mask on early on for America. He's trying to get America secure, and which is what he's done from day one when you think about it, with the borders and all the talks here, what's been going on, you know. And, you know, that mask is important. But I remember him saying in just recent days how he would love to help other countries out. And he looks forward to sending, you know, ventilators there and masks and different things that they may need in this time of great need for humanity. And he wants to help save other people because, well, this is humanity, he says. We need to be worried. We need to be concerned. We need to help thy fellow man. And that's a beautiful thing. Now, the press never reports the point that I just made. I just reported it to you because it is a fact. It is an absolute fact. I've seen it with my own eyes. I've heard it with my own ears. And I know it's a fact. It's a truth. But it is never reported out there clearly, right? And so now you know that he talks about that in that sense. From where I like to be, 35,000 feet. I love 35,000 feet. It's my favorite place to be because I can really see what is going on down on Earth, you see, yeah? So, and I take my mind there all the time at 35,000 feet. So I'm on a constant plane ride, basically, you see? And I'm looking at 35,000 feet down to see how I can help, what's going on exactly. That's what President Trump does. He's a remarkable man at a most remarkable time in history, quite frankly. But his call and his beckon for history and humanity to help others and to step out beyond America goes against the grain of what his enemies and critics have pointed out, that he doesn't care. He doesn't care about other people. He doesn't care about people around the world. That's clearly what's happened here. And he does care. His speeches prove it. Things that have gone on prove it. So I beg to differ with you all as to what that means, you know? Yeah. So those three choices, I want to talk to you more about this bigger topic today, fables, fairy tales, and fodder. And I have some fairy tales for you in a moment that I must share with you that will shine a light in a few areas, hopefully get us to think a little bit, because isn't that, after all, what this is all about, to get us to think a little bit more, a little bit clearer, step back again, and see the big picture of life. And I want to bring you into a very special program today as well, as we celebrate our four-year anniversary at America Out Loud. And that's no fairy tale, friends. So this all started April 1st, 2016. But safe to say that America Out Loud has a purpose and a vision here. We're supposed to be here. We're supposed to be doing the work that we're doing. So we're just a baby in the scope of all of this. We are a grassroots movement of beautiful people, of patriots and amazing folks from around the globe, because there are patriots living in other countries as well, amazing people who also see the brightness of America, the beauty of America. And so we rally those folks together, and somehow we've been able to encapsulate some of the most amazing, beautiful people and spirits here on this platform. And when we launched initially as America Out Loud, it was to create this platform that would challenge the status quo, that would put faith in place of fear, that would fight the good fight and make evil silent. That's what we do here on a daily basis. And so with this, on this fourth anniversary here today, I welcome you into our program and ask you to become part of the movement here. I ask you to get the word out there to your friends, your associates, to people you know and people you respect, and maybe people you that are challenging you, people that are in the middle aisle, as I say to you often. Invite those people in, but mainly get the word out there and let people know about this interesting place called America Out Loud. So we're in the early days of something very special here, something very unique. It's hard to put this all in words or context, but it is a unique place with unique people on a unique mission at a unique moment of time. And our hands are on the wheel. We do have faith, and we know God's hand is on the wheel. And that's that third choice that I choose to be with. And that's the essence of this platform. It's the essence of our anniversary and the essence of today. So I welcome you in, friends, to our anniversary at America Out Loud and ask you to become part of the movement. Help us market this and get the word out there and bring people into a more encouraging message. Something that looks at the beauty of life and preserves humanity and helps America get over this hurdle so that we can get on to the next 243 years. That is the goal. AmericaOutLoud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, as we celebrate our four-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. We are a grassroots movement of patriots, blogs, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
If your time to you is worth saving, stop swimming or you'll sink like a stone. For the times, they are changing. Come writers and critics, you prophesize with your pen, and keep your eyes wide, the chance won't come again. And don't speak too soon, for the wheel's still in spin, and there's no telling who that it's naming. For the loser now will be later to win, for the times they are changing.
So in that song with Bob Dylan there that I was telling you about, the times they are a changing. That was a song back in 1964. And music is amazing because it captures the moment of a time. And when you really get into the lyrics of music, it connects people. There's something, I was telling you earlier about when I was a young boy playing pastor, you know, as many of you, where I was also a young boy singing. And there are times I wish I'd had the voice. Maybe I did have the voice. You know, it's funny. If we don't pursue the path, we never really know what we're going to be good at, do we? If we don't pursue what's in front of us. But I remember trying to sing as a young boy, and I thought, you know, but I love music anyways, is the point here. I'm not going to try to sing to you today. But everything is an acquired taste in life, isn't it now, huh? Yeah, but let's leave Bob Dylan to the singing. He's far more experienced than Malcolm is. But in that song, the times they are a changing, he says in the lyrics in that second part of one of the other verses, actually, I like this line I want to share with you here. Come, senators, congressmen, please heed the call. Don't stand in the doorway. Don't block up the hall. For he that gets hurt will be he who has stalled. There's a battle outside, and it is raging. It'll soon shake your windows and rattle your walls, for the times, they are a-changing. Wow. I hope those words speak to you as much as they speak to me. There is a battle outside, and it is a-raging, people. And it is shaking our windows, there's no doubt, and rattling the walls. And times are definitely a-changing because that's what they're supposed to do, you see. That's what history's all about, to be able to look back. And mankind will look back at this moment of time, and they will see, they'll judge us on what we did and how we do it. And I want to share with you next some fairy tales. History always leaves us with a record of tales that we don't understand often of the political issues at that moment in the distant past, if you will. You know, they become fairy tales. We call them fairy tales anyways. And we read them to our little kids. But do we really understand the meaning of these fairy tales? Well, we'd be horrified, and most would, and very, very hesitant about revealing the real truths now to the kids, because it would scare them. It would probably scare you as well if you understand the fairy tales of time, right? Well, the fairy tales we grew up with, as you recall, as young lads and boys and girls, yeah? Well, they reveal in code, kind of a code, actually, some of the worst periods of medieval Europe. So while we were enchanted by the little books that told us about Mother Goose, a Mother Goose was about population control. But here we read the Mother Goose rhymes and riddles to the kids, you know. Population control. That's an aspiration for globalists, isn't it now? For the elite. You look at Hansel and Gretel. And it was actually about starvation and infanticide. Think about that with the house and the food and the candy. You remember all that? Starvation and infanticide. And yet we're reading those to the kids. Jack and the Beanstalk was about sloth and idleness. And King Midas is about avarice and greed. So the fairy tales of yesteryear that we read to the kids, do we really even know what they're all about? Probably not. But they captured that moment of time that the world was going through back then. Population control, starvation, infanticide, sloth, idleness, avarice, greed, you know, all of these things, all these human emotions, human conditions, if you will, you know. You know, how do we as adults explain to our kids and our grandkids the future fairy tales that would define today? How do you think that will be? What are the fairy tales that will come out of this moment of time that will describe, I don't know, the medieval states or the medieval China, the medieval virus that impacted the world, the pandemic, the plague, the moment that brought the world to a standstill? How do we describe those fairy tales to people from today when future generations sit down with their kids and they describe the moment of time, just like we do with Hansel and Gretel, the Mother Goose, good old Jack and the Beanstalk, you know, King Midas, amazing stories. They capture the spirit of growing up, and we have memories of those fairy tales, you know. Well, let me give you an example of a few thoughts here. Like good King Trump's reign, let's say they look back at King Trump in a fairy tale land now I'm speaking about, and how he handled the bad virus, the coronavirus. You got to say that in a scary way, the coronavirus, and captured the world's imagination. Well, they would say his truthfulness rocked the boat of the evil distant cousin to Nancy. She was previously removed from the head of the family for her wicked ways prior. You see, her family, Nancy's family, was invaded by some corrupt women from another town, hiding under the guise of green new environments and a way to control the people in the town with Sharia law. All designed very nicely, friends, as politically correct soup that you need to eat up. And that would save you from the ugly virus. Oh, well, that's a fairy tale they'll be telling down the road, huh? Or the Dashing Prince, maybe Bill Clinton's association with the Black Knight. Jeffrey Epstein, that is, yeah? Well, Bill, he was known as the town creep. He and Jerry were quite the duo on their plane rides to islands with very young women. But because Bill at one time was in charge of the castle, the people always looked the other way. They know how he was in the castle and the kinds of deeds he would do with the young mistresses and interns. When the Black Knight, Jerry, was finally arrested and thrown in prison, Bill couldn't remember the guy's name. And then it all magically fixed itself when Jerry disappeared by a hanging. Oh, what a fairy tale that's going to be to tell the kids, huh? Can't wait. And there are so many more. I mean, what island would Carlos's youthful wooden character Pinocchio end up on? Pleasure Island, or is it Pedophile Island? Would Hillary Clinton become Maleficent or the Wicked Witch? One will only wonder, won't they now? The fairy tales of today, how will they be told in the future about this present time? It's interesting when you think about the times we live in, isn't it now? There's always more to the story, isn't there now, friends? Always more to the story. You know, those early fairy tales and fables were actually political essays, for sure. But none addressed what is the most important issue today in our time. And it really is even more of an issue than this pandemic business that is happening. And when we talk about mankind here or the United States, it's nationalism, which I just explained to you just a bit earlier here, and the humanity aspect of putting your mask on the plane. You know, it's the same thing here. Or collectivism, you know, the greater good. People get lost with that, nationalism or collectivism. Certainly our political leaders do. They're totally confused. They don't understand what they mean. Well, the people who push this collectivism do so in the belief that all Americans are united in agreement with the grand goal, you know, of kumbaya moments of holding hands and stealing from all and passing it around. And I don't know what kind of a life they're, what fairy tale these people are on, or what they think they're leaving to the kids. And why don't we all just agree now and get it done? Because that's the way it's got, because that's it. Clearly, we do not all agree, people. And unity is absolutely a myth when it comes to these kinds of ideas. There is no unity. Let's be clear. What there can't also be is politically correctness. You have to put your hand on the wheel. And you have to have faith. And make sure your mask is on so you can help the other kids and the other people as well. Not for the pandemic. That's not going to be the problem. It's all of the other big things we're talking about here that are going to be the problem. And I'm here to remind you of that. As your friend and ally and cohort here, I'm here to remind you exactly what that means, you know. The collectivists, these folks, they argue that socialism is kind of their panacea for society's ills. And of course, the bigger problem than the fact that they believe it is a horde of trained SEALs believe them as well. Now, you're going to remember when you say, well, who the hell are the horde, these trained SEALs? I mean, well, these are the trained SEALs that have been fed, clothed, and brainwashed to what to think and how to think for a very long time now. See, this thing's been building for a very long time. And that really is the pandemic of our lifetime, is this collectivism and socialism, and then AKA communism. And then you've got your one world government going on, and you've got the people in control, the elites that own the farm. Now, to the left, friends, the collectivists, that is, those are the people there. Nationalism is the biggest problem to achieving the utopia of this common mediocrity, let's call it. That's a good way to describe it, actually. Common mediocrity. We all look the same, feel the same, and act the same. And you can take some of my porridge, and I'll give you some of mine, and I'll take some of yours. Even you lazy ones that are doing nothing in your lives, I'll give you some porridge. Well, of course, what happens, a leader like Donald Trump comes along and he defies all the standards of this conformity expected of a world leader, right? You know, he achieves more than any of them on behalf of his own country. nationalism, United States of America, Americans, real Americans. And he confounds the thinking of all the other leaders combined around the world that are left there, paused, kind of shocked. Their eyes are blazing forward like, who is this guy? You know, what kind of a fairy tale does he come from? You know, and how are we going to describe this to future generations with what he's doing, you know? Interesting, huh? Friends, the times will always be a-changing. If they ever stop changing, then we're in trouble. And there are always going to be challenges coming forth. There are always going to be a pandemic of our time. In fact, if you look historically, every 100 years, there is some sort of a worldwide catastrophe of some sort that has rattled the cages of humanity, of man. And that moment determines, back to those three choices I mentioned to you earlier, you see, the three choices. Let me remind you now of those three choices again. The first choice being that we're living in end times and fear is the name of the game. That's the first choice. And a lot of people are living that way right now. I'm getting emails in and messages in from people around the world. I'm getting folks in that I've seen stories written by people who think they're prophetic and others from the religious community who are committing themselves to thinking these are the end times. The world has never been through such a moment like this ever before in history. It's over. It's done. Say your prayers. Get on your knees. We're through. I think they're wrong. I beg to differ with those people. It is not. And I don't, in fact, truth be told to you, there are some specific leaders, religious leaders, who wanted to come on my program. And they sent me a couple of messages, and I did not respond to the first ones. I just looked the other way and ignored them. We get a lot of responses in every day, so I don't respond to all of them that want to be on the program or have some special magic power or medicine for us to take, you know. And then I noticed there are people coming at me, and I noticed other people coming at me, and then I noticed the newsletters they were sending me, and I noticed the messages that they were talking about the end times, and that God was talking to this religious leader, and that this was going to be the end times, that we were over and done with. I don't know. Maybe they lost faith. Maybe it's their moment of fear. And I know some people would argue with me and bring it back to the moment of, you know, well, you know, America goes down and we can talk about that. That's another conversation for another day. When you read the Bible and you understand the point of history and where is the world at and where does it end? Of course, you have to have faith to believe any of this. And if you don't have faith, it doesn't matter anyways. If you're an atheist or agnostic or you have no sense about the world being here or how it got here, that's a whole nother problem. None of this is an accident, people. The world is not an accident. Earth, planet Earth's not an accident. Humanity's not an accident. The United States of America is not an accident. You being here today is not an accident. I'm talking to you today is not an accident. There is a purpose and a point of reference to all of these things. It is to be. It is supposed to be. So this fear factor that takes people over, and this the religious leaders who believe in that it is end times. And like I said, I've had messages in, and I did send a response to that one group. And I've done things before with this group. They're out of Europe. They're a different group. I'm not going to say their name or get into them, but I've done things before. But I declined their offer to come on and talk about this. And to use my platform and voice because they thought they needed it at the moment. I don't know, maybe to spread their word of fear or to do, I don't know. It's a whole nother story. Don't need to get into. But, you know, the bigger picture here is that I don't believe, number one, is where we're at, that we are living in end times and that fear is going to be. And even the other day, even my son said that we're all going to die. You know, the kids are saying this. He's a teenager, but he's the kids are fearful. I mean, they're doing school from the internet now, and everything is locked down, and they're not going anywhere to their favorite place, and they realize something's happening. They don't quite know what it is. And they're not, remember, young people, their brains are not matured. They don't have the maturity at 15, 16, 17, 18 years old. That's a science fact, not my opinion. They don't really get their real power till after 23, at least. Some people would argue and say 26, 27, whatever. I mean, I always used to say earlier that we're kind of all brain dead until we're at least 23. We don't really know. We don't have the maturity, you know. And the inexperience is a fail, is a deficit. And so, and that's part of the problem of taking the history out of all of this, out of the schools and education and all of that. That's what happens. There's a deficit there. And that deficit is what we're experiencing right now with a generation that is ignorant to so much out there. And they really believe this collectivism is a cool thing. And that they're bought up on this stuff. And they don't really understand history. They don't understand what happened back then and that there were other pandemics and mankind and humanity in history. And they have no clue, people. My son wouldn't know that. He wouldn't have a clue. I mean, they're not really taught all that in school. I mean, he knows a little bit more than some. He hears me. And, of course, it's our job as parents to tell the kids this because the school's not doing it. But I digress, yeah. Topic for another day as well, isn't it? No. We'll continue on with the Voice of the Nation in just a moment.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
Listen to Malcolm, the Voice of a Nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
So one of the messages I received in is from a dear listener, a very dear, passionate friend of the network and a listener. I will call her for the purpose of today, Linda. And she says this, her message is, Malcolm, it's getting scary in Boston. The more we get restricted, the higher my anxiety goes. Even though I'm normally a homebody, maybe you could do a program about the psychology aspects of this mess. So I share that with you for you to understand that people are scared and people do see there's always a psychological aspect to all of this, friends. So when I mentioned faith and fear, I would tell Linda that, well, we first have to put our hand on the third option, the wheel of faith. And you have to know that God has his hands on the wheel as well. That's that third option I give you, friends. And that is the option to really truly dig down in your soul and grab onto that faith and to know that there's a big picture to all of this. There's a purpose to everything I share with you. Everything has a purpose. The moment or the time may look dire, may look bleak, but it's been that way before, many times over. We have been in far worse situations than we are today, even though it seems not that way. And of course, the younger generation wouldn't know that because they don't understand these. They did not study any of these historical moments of American history or world history for that matter. And that now we see the importance of that for them to get the gravity of today and truly understand today, they must know and learn yesterday. Okay? That is the only way. So that is the wake-up call to all, is education and the system we have in play is a wake-up call for all. We take nothing for chance. We don't put our head under the pillow. We don't turn it off. we get involved in the process. So the third option is very key, and there are some caveats to that, as I say. Doesn't mean, don't tell me, there are some people who believe that, again, free will, I tell you. God doesn't say, put your head under the wheel and don't get involved, I'll take care of everything. That's not what this is about. And there are many religious folks who believe that they're not supposed to do anything, that God has it all. That is not accurate. That is not true. God gave you free will to make those decisions, to change the outcome, people. So just, I think there's something to what we're talking about right now. And free will is the message here to all of us. It doesn't mean that God is going to take care of everything. And people say, well, why do these things happen? My son asked me that the other day. Why is God doing this? He asked me a question like that, right along that lines. And, you know, and there's the answer is what I'm telling you right now. It's the free will of man who does these things. God isn't up there to fix everything before it ever happens, to make our path rosy and, you know, jumpy with red tulips and green grass, and that's all we need to see in life, that there is no evil. No, life is good and evil. It just is that way, people. And so it's important to mention that to you. So again, the psychology of this, the times, they are a-changing. They are a-changing. Bob Dylan had it right in 1964. He had it right. And he talked about that in that song. And so my message today in this fourth anniversary is to give you a moment of hope and to know that psychologically we're in a position to do all of this and then some. We will have faith, and we will replace the fear with faith. We will put our hand on the wheel here. I want to ask somebody now, one of our producers here, and a voice you recognize potentially on the platform, is a good friend of the program here. Arnetta Nockin joins me here. And Arnetta, I give three choices, the first, second, and third. And a big question, and on this fourth anniversary program, I want to ask you, which door do you open? What is your option of choice with those that I provide there?
I truly believe that we are being given an option and the opportunity to actually look into our very souls as a person, as an American citizen, and perhaps even if you don't have faith in yourself and mankind. Because I think that given this time in history, if we don't dig deep and become responsible for our own actions and open our heart to help others, and not just stick our head in the sand and say somebody else will take care of it, we will be challenged on a level that we have never been challenged in this country before. I do believe this is a different time, a more perilous time, and we will be given the opportunity to change every aspect of our lives, including the political, the educational, and our personal way we live.
One of the big points that Arnetta is saying here, we cannot lose sight of people, and that is we all have a part to play. And Arnetta, what that means is we can't have people that, I know far too many people, and really some good people, by the way, that tend to look, they take the choice of looking the other way. They don't get involved in anything, and they play the fear game. But more than that, they just leave it to other people to handle. And that's been going on for too long, where they just turn it all off. And that is a real danger right now, which you just point out very eloquently by saying, no. We all have to have a part here, to whatever part that's going to be. And so I want to encourage everybody out there listening to please choose your part, but get involved and help us. Well, help all of us, help America out, help humanity out, proceed forward. I think what really bothers me is people think we're in the worst time of humanity, that this moment of time, we've never been through a time like this at all. And Arnetta, I'm going to tell you look historically at humanity, and this is by far not the worst time man has been through, I'm telling you. This is not the worst time. Mankind has been through some very perilous moments, and they have not only prevailed, but they have gotten stronger on the other side. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense. This generation has never been affected in the way that we're being affected, being told to stay home. You can't go to work. You can't socialize. And it's frightening because they've never been through it, never experienced it. And that's why I believe we're being given this opportunity to keep from going down that path that we've faced before in this country and in the world. I mean, talk to a veteran, talk to what they've been through in the world wars, if there's any that you know that's still alive, and just imagine what they suffered and went through. This is not the worst of times. It's not the best of times. But if we don't change, if we don't take responsibility for ourselves, we are headed, I believe, to the worst of times.
That's it. God, that is well said, my friend. That is well said. We have to replace where I started. We have to replace fear with faith. That's number one. That's the psychological aspects. That's the biggest psychological shift I can say to somebody today, and the best help I can give to anybody out there is a psychological shift in your mind to replace one F word with the other F word. So get rid of fear and replace it with faith, and have some faith within these times to know that there is a purpose of all of this. And yes, times are a changing, but we can make it. We can get to the other side of the hurdle, and something stronger can be there. And that's my message today. But you know, Arnetta, that was the message and mission of America Out Loud. In the last couple of moments, I'd like to talk to you about that fourth anniversary and what our mission is here. You know, not surprisingly, on the platform, I say right at the very tip top of AmericaOutLoud.com, here we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. Now, that's been there from moment one when we launched this back in 2016, April 1st, 2016, as we celebrate this month of April, our four-year anniversary. I think that is important when we talk about the generational shift that's happening here and why our mission here at America Out Loud is so vital.
Absolutely, Malcolm. It's why I got involved with America Out Loud when I was listening to you, heard you, and saw and felt in my heart, as you know, when I spoke with you, that indeed, you have been given a mission, and that mission is to help spread the news, as they used to say in the Gospels, in the tent revivals. It's time that people listened, and they only have a way of listening. It's not mainstream media. It's not the media that's controlled by the political class. It's a free and open voice, and that's what you offered, and I do believe that is your mission.
This is a moment of time where America, where we can stand and be counted, where America has a place and a position and a moment of time for us to do the math in our own lives and reach higher. And that's been our mission here from day one. So please come along here. Join us. Join our movement here of outstanding people. Help us get the word out there. Be part of something more unique and a higher message. And I thank you, as always, for being part of this journey here, friends. This is Malcolm Out Loud. It's time to get involved and get loud.